Good morning. You're listening to WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. Welcome to our broadcast. This is Truth and Justice Radio, and we're switching over now to This Week in Palestine. And we're able to do it in the old style. And let me bring up a voice that many of you have not heard for about half a year, and which will bring back memories for many.
طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? What is your reason not to?
That was the voice of Sharif Pham, who hosted this program until he passed away last August. A collective of his friends continues the program in his memory. Good morning. I am John Roberts, and I'm joined this morning with my co-host, Samer Jaber, a resident of Bethlehem, currently working on his master's degree at Brandeis University and the JFK School of Government. First, this news from Palestine. Israel's Central Bureau of Statistics last month released the most recent population statistics for Jewish West Bank settlements. The figures show that during 2010, the growth rate was 4.4% to only 2.9% for Israel as a whole. Despite the 10-month construction freeze that ended in September, the Jewish population in West Bank settlements, illegal under international law, grew by nearly 15,000 and now totals 327,800. These figures do not include the estimated 230,000 Jews living in annexed East Jerusalem. Yaakov Katz, head of the Israeli National Union Party, said that at current growth rates and without a construction freeze, the Jewish population in the West Bank can be expected to hit 500,000 by the middle of 2018. Announcing the data on Israeli television, Katz went on to say that the extensive growth rate in our biblical homeland expresses the deep and strong will of the people of Israel to settle its land in its entirety as the land of its forefathers, to which only they have full rights. Benjamin Netanyahu recently told the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee that, quote, "It should be remembered that we, as Jews, have been within the broad borders of the land of Israel not tens or hundreds of years, but thousands of years. When the Palestinians talk about historic rights, they should remember that they have been there a shorter time. The rights of the Jews to Hebron, Beit El, Rachel's Tomb, and Shiloh are greater and much more significant. Therefore, these places should remain in our hands in any arrangement." Samer, this sounds like the old canard that Israel belongs to the Jews as ordained by God. The claim that they were there before anyone else is just simply false. Other tribes, such as the Canaanites, populated the land, and in fact, there are archaeological sites which substantiate that other Semitic peoples were there at least as long as, if not longer, than the tribes of Israel. Much of this is substantiated in Mazen Kumsaya's book, Sharing the Land of Canaan. And certainly Abraham's tomb, the Tomb of the Patriarchs in Hebron, and Rachel's tomb in Bethlehem, both in the Palestinian West Bank, sites sacred to three religions, have been completely taken over by Israel, and only Jews now have access to them. Israel is not only taking over the land and religious sites, it's trying to take over the writing of history also.
Actually, this is a kind of selectivity of reading the history, and depending on Torah and the Old Testament, just to find that Jews have a longer history. We do not mind that this happened, that already Jewish were part of this land, and I think that Palestinians are the direct inheritant of the Jewish heritage, since their grandfathers, I believe that they were Jewish, then they converted to Christianity, and some of them became later on as Muslims. The question is political questions. We have to answer these political questions. All the three religions have the right to access to these three holy sites and to the holy sites, and any things that deny this, this means that it's a kind of segregation and denying the Christian and Muslim rights in the area. Otherwise, the question is political and should answered by political facts.
Moving on, demonstrations at the separation wall in the Palestinian village of Beit Lin are constantly in the news because of the brutal response by the Israeli military. What follows is an account by Hannah Mermelstein, a Jewish activist who is currently leading a North American group in its current visit to the West Bank. The group is trying to get to Beit Lin to support the protest at the wall. Hannah writes, "As we trudge through the terraced land, ducking under branches of olive trees and trying to avoid prickly bushes, I think about landscape, consciousness, and memory. We are walking through the land because Israeli soldiers are blocking the road ahead. They're blocking the road ahead so as not to allow people to arrive in the Palestinian village of Beit Lin. We are going to Beit Lin in order to protest the confiscation of the village's land for settlement and wall construction. At Beit Lin's demonstration a week earlier, 36-year-old Jawahar Abu Ram inhaled a lethal dose of tear gas. Her brother, Bassam, was shot and killed by an Israeli soldier at a protest in the village less than 2 years ago. So we traipsed through the olive groves, only slightly out of view of the soldiers on the road, and a line by Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish comes to mind. If the olive trees knew the hands that planted them, their oil would become tears. Beit Lin has become a battleground, the surrounding landscape a stage for risky game of cat and mouse. What kind of consciousness does the land have? What would it say if it could? The wall is often described as a scar through Palestine, but right now it is more of a fresh wound. When the wall falls, will the scar left be permanent?" Samer, you're familiar with the situation in Beit Lin. In fact, you know and have recently spoken to the family of Jawahar Abu Ram, who was killed by lethal Israeli tear gas just last week. What can you tell me about the family that has lost two of its members in these peaceful demonstrations against the wall in Beit Lin and the situation in Beit Lin?
Well, in fact, this family lost their lands in the wall. They own almost 2 acres of land planted by olive. So their lands is behind the wall, and they have direct reason to struggle against this segregation wall. And as we see that when people lose their resources, they have to struggle. They cannot wait, and they did what they have to do. And basically, people, when they struggle, they would face this kind of loss, and this great loss. However, Israeli security forces is not considering any kind of human rights, and they do not use even quote unquote the reasonable tools to to deal with these demonstrations, and they just try to muzzle the voice of the people. So the only way to answer and to stop these demonstrations is to recognize the fact that there is occupation, and people will keep struggle until they end this occupation.
Thank you. This morning we have on the phone for our interview Simcha Leventhal, who was born and raised in an ultra-Jewish Orthodox community in Mexico City. At the age of 15, his family moved to Israel. At the age of 17, Simcha decided to leave the ultra-Orthodox society and join the secular world. He enlisted in the Israeli Defense Force in 2000 and served for 3 years. After he was discharged from the army in 2004, along with a group of fellow soldiers who also served in the occupied Palestinian territory, he founded Breaking the Silence, an organization dedicated to informing the public and decision makers about the reality witnessed and participated in by Israeli soldiers. Since the end of his army service, he has continued to devote himself to peace and human rights in both his work and academic life. He has worked with Peace Now Settlement Watch Project as a researcher and co-director. Currently, he is a graduate student at Tufts University in the Program for Urban and Environmental Policy and Planning. He is also completing a certificate in Water Resource Management. In a minute, we will be speaking with Simcha about the expansion of Jewish settlements in East Jerusalem. But this final news item this week frames the issue we will be discussing. Dr. Saeb Arakat, chief Palestinian negotiator, denounced the Israeli demolition of the Shepherd's Hotel in East Jerusalem this past week. The Shepherd's Hotel, an historic Palestinian site, is currently being demolished in order to facilitate the construction of a residential Jewish settlement. This demolition and settlement construction plans mask a settlement project that dates back to 1984. In July 2009, the Israeli planning authorities approved the construction license for the project, thus allowing for the demolition of the existing building in favor of two new residential buildings, which will include 30 housing units and associated amenities at the first stage and 90 housing units at a later stage. Dr. Arakat went on to say that the United Nations and governments around the world, including the United States and the United Kingdom, have already condemned plans to demolish this particular hotel. We call on the world to take a strong stand in defense of their positions. This intransigent and illegal behavior on behalf of Israel must not be allowed to proceed unchecked, he said. He also added, Israel continues to change the landscape of Jerusalem, aiming to change its status and turn it into an exclusive Jewish city. This process of cleansing and colonization must be stopped to change the dark reality of Israeli occupation into a free and sovereign Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. Settlement plans in Sheikh Jarrah, similar to those in Silwan, Mount of Olives, and other neighborhoods in East Jerusalem, aim to create a ring of Jewish settlements, severing the old city from the rest of the Palestinian-occupied East Jerusalem in the West Bank. Simcha Leventhal, welcome to This Week in Palestine, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
So, Simcha, what do you think about the policy of the Israeli government concerning the Palestinian presence in East Jerusalem? Do you agree with Dr. Arakat when he described it as an ethnic cleansing in the long run?
Well, basically, what we have in Jerusalem, you know, of 2010, but maybe of Jerusalem of post 2000, when they started building the walls around Jerusalem, are a few, like, levels, you know, of separation from Palestinians or, you know, the general Palestinians to Jerusalem. And, you know, beyond that separation wall that prevents most Palestinians, like all Palestinians living outside of the separation wall, from accessing this the holy sites for them and Jerusalem, and maybe that about 200,000+ Palestinians living without within Jerusalem. We have a series of settlements that are being erected by different settlement groups, which are just private NGOs, which are supported by mostly or a lot of them by U.S. foundations. And what they're doing is building settlements or grabbing land in different ways. In some cases, they're buying the land directly from Palestinians. In other cases, such as the case of Sheikh Jarrah, it is land that was held or that was owned by Jews prior to 1948, and then refugees were put into those houses by the UN. And now, through the Israeli courts, they're going back to those houses. But to in order to understand that, you understand this is super it's not even complex, but it has to do with the way the structure of the Israeli law is, where Palestinians who lost their house within Jerusalem of the boundaries of before 1967, so they completely lost it because they were refugees. But the Israelis or the Jews who own land in the Jordanian Jerusalem are still... that land, that those houses are still theirs according to the law, so families are being evacuated. And then you have other houses in Silwan. So all over around the old city of Jerusalem, there are many, many settlements that have been erected there the past 20 years. What I find kind of inspiring is that most of the Israeli public does not support this. And most of the Israeli public sees the future of Jerusalem as something that can be negotiated. And therefore, when these organizations that are mostly private, although are supported by the right wing, are changing the landscape before a peace agreement or negotiation on this topic is held, I find this detrimental for future peace. And I don't see... how, you know, this change is just too severe, and it's really stopping future prospect to peace. And not only the settlements inside Jerusalem, but, you know, general settlement growth, it's to set facts on the ground, etc.
Yes, Simcha, you know, over the last 2 years, we have seen extensive intrusion into the Arab neighborhoods by Jewish settlers in the East Jerusalem. A leading example is the case of Beit Yonatan, an illegal built home according to the Israeli law, erected by Jewish and predominant Arab neighborhood of Silwan in East Jerusalem. The Jerusalem municipality continued to delay implementation of an Israeli court order to evict the Jewish resident from Beit Yonatan and seal the building. At the same time, Israel has accelerated the demolition of Palestinian houses. The Israeli policy has developed from the demolition of individual houses into demolition of whole neighborhoods like Al Bustan in Silwan. So, Simcha, describe what's taking place there in Silwan, Sheikh Jarrah, and what's the effect of this over on the communities. So we find that there is some part that break the law, though they are protected by the police and the local government.
When I was working in Peace Now in 2008, so we get this like master plan for Silwan, and you know they're like developing this huge. There's this huge tourist attraction, which is an archaeological site. And this archaeological site is actually run by one of these right-wing organizations that purchases house and houses Jews and, you know, so forth, and trying to take, you know, to take their control over the neighborhood or most of Silwan or a big part of Silwan. So this master plan was to deal with this archaeological site. And when we examined this master plan, we found that the houses who were getting permission to build like a second or a third floor to expand where predominantly those houses that were purchased or taken control of by the settlers. And the Palestinians living in that neighborhood, on the other hand, were being limited, and the area in front of their house was converted into parking spaces. And we need to understand, I guess, that this is, Beit Yonatan might be like one example, but this is much, this goes beyond one house and one settler group and one organization that takes control over one house. And this is more rather a policy that is happening and that is being put forth by Jerusalem Municipality, by the Israeli government that very strongly supports the settlement in Sidon. Back in, I think it was the end of 2009, there was, you know, the office of the prime minister held a private tour and a party to this settlement. And what's happening in Beit Yonatan, it's actually gone to the courts, and but the issue is a lot greater than one building being erected in the middle of the Palestinian neighborhood. It's actually, if you stand in any place, Silwan or in the or near Damascus Gate, so you see Beit Yonatan. It's like a big, big building that doesn't fit in the landscape at all, and on it a huge Israeli flag. And this is not the Jerusalem we are struggling for. And when I say we, is this. There is a group that's been demonstrating more than a year with a slogan, we're not going to be quiet. And exactly, we're not going to be quiet for these kind of activities of settlements and settlers coming and taking away Palestinian land and not giving them full access. So this is a reality that, that will not result in a Jerusalem that I would strive for, a Jerusalem that is open to all and respectful of everybody, and a Jerusalem that could be a place of dialogue. And rather, what we're seeing now is a Jerusalem where settler groups that are setting the tone are excluding others from being part or having a dialogue with one another.
Simcha, maybe this is an oversimplification, but it seems to me we have... on the one hand, Israelis are able to cite old land deeds or former claims to houses and to land that does not apply to Palestinians who can be, you know, driven out of their houses and off their land. And the same applies to building permits. You know, Israelis can build almost anywhere, but yet. Palestinians can't get permits to, you know, to build on their own land. Is that double standard? Is that an oversimplification of what's happening?
Unfortunately, it's not an oversimplification. Really, unfortunately, it's not, and it's very, very, very sad, and it's tragic. The first part of your description, you know, that's basically what happened in Sheikh Jarrah, and that's what is happened. People who lost their land in West Jerusalem, and by their own account, you know, in interviews, and I haven't spoken to them directly, but I've heard, I have read this. It was an Arutz interview with a family with that lost their land in West Jerusalem and were living in East Jerusalem. And they had said, you know, we kind of gave up our houses in West Jerusalem, you know, understanding that there was a war, and, you know, now we're going to a new phase and hoping that their new residence in East Jerusalem would be their home and they would be secure there. But, like, with the way this these organizations and the way the structure of the Israeli law is going, it really puts a huge question on those houses in West Jerusalem. And this is a severe double standard that should be stopped. And, of course, like, according to my personal point of view, people who lost their property, and due to the war in 1948, should also be recompensated, or if they're still living, you know, in Jerusalem, they a way should be found for them either to go back to their home or a way to be recompensated for their home if that is not possible. But the structure of the Israeli law currently sets one standard for Palestinians who lost their home and for Jews who lost their home. That's one thing. And the building permit regime is, there are neighborhoods that 90% of them are built illegally or with no permit. And in some places, it's because it's just impossible for a Palestinian to get a permit there. And in other places, the way the bureaucracy work and the expenses that have to do with getting a building permit make it impossible for a Palestinian or for somebody who's like trying to, you know, to struggle through life to get a permit. We can see that, like, the building permit costs, both for Israelis and Palestinians, like both for Jews and Arabs, can reach about a fifth of the value of the house. And for Jews or for Israelis, there is a very, very well-developed mortgage system, etc., you know. And usually Israeli Jews are not going out there and building their homes, you know, in their property or a family plot. So they could actually afford and live with these kind of elevated cost of permitting and all the complications and bureaucracy that goes around it. But a family that is trying to put together a house for one of their newly married children or expand their house in order to accommodate one new family member, for them, it's very, very difficult to do that. And then, so that is one tier of the, and then the third part is how this is enforced, how these laws are enforced. And if you guys go and check it out at the Anti-Demolition and ICAT's website, you can see a lot about how these demolitions take place and who are the people who are suffering from the demolitions. And at the end of it, it's pretty random. And demolitions mostly happen in Jerusalem in areas with political sensitivity.
Yes, Simcha. You know, we know that Israel occupied East Jerusalem in 1967, and the Israeli leaders promised that the city will not be broken again, and it's just united in 1980 based on Jerusalem law. East Jerusalem become annexed totally to Israel. What does this mean from policy perspective? Does this mean that Israel only started to build settlements in East Jerusalem after 1980s? Also, Palestinians refer to East Jerusalem as part of the city that was occupied, as we know, in 67 war, that include old cities surrounding neighborhoods like Silwan and Sheikh Jarrah. What's about the Israeli perspective concerning Jerusalem, especially when we know that Gilo settlement, that is considered by Israel to be Jerusalem neighborhood, was actually built in the Palestinian town of Beit Jala, which is the West Bank area. Can you explain this, please?
Again, like my personal view, the current boundaries of Jerusalem, according to that 1980 law, make Jerusalem larger than Greater Paris. And it's pretty, pretty, pretty extensive city. And as you said, it includes Gilo, it includes, I don't know if you would know, and he's got Ze'ev, and it's a very big city that, with the intention to keep a certain demographic, annexed some parts of the city and did not annex other parts of, of what used to be neighboring parts of the city. And there is some parts that were annexed were in East Jerusalem, some parts that were annexed and are being talked to be annexed, or there's been some public debate about annexing them, have been in West Jerusalem or areas that were Israel in pre-1967. What I'm concerned about is with the complete denial of Palestine, both important culturally and religiously for Palestinians, and of the denial of their rights as residents of the city. We all know that most Palestinians do not recognize East Jerusalem as a part of Israel, Jerusalem, I guess, if you could say. Palestinians, although they would be receiving extreme or very big economic benefits of taking the Israeli citizenship, which is an option for Palestinian Jerusalemites, only 5% of them have taken the option of becoming Israeli, and making it pretty clear to the world and to themselves that they see themselves as Palestinian. So this denial on the one hand, and this trying to prevent people from actually living a good life, you know, as residents of the city, regardless of their political views, regardless of their religious or ethnic, this is something of great concern to me. And as I said at the beginning, I remember reading a survey, I think it was back in 2008 or 2009 when I was still working for Peace Now. I don't remember, the survey was, I think, conducted by one of the, by an American organization, and it actually showed that 78% of the Israelis perceived Jerusalem to be a divided city. And more than 60% thought that they would be willing that Jerusalem should have a Palestinian or Arab jurisdiction on top of the city. And we know that, like, in the Oslo Accords and Camp David and Clinton parameters and things, negotiations that occurred between Israelis and Palestinians, they were very creative solutions that were provided for Jerusalem, that Palestinians, from what I heard, were willing to accept to a certain extent. So while things look pretty grim, I do think that there is hope on Jerusalem. And what I would say that what we need to be doing today, or if not 20 or 30 years ago, is give full rights to the Palestinians that are in Jerusalem, giving them their political rights and to be part of the Palestinian public debate, to be part of Palestine, to and that happening while maybe the political negotiations are going on, making sure that the schools of East Jerusalem are spacious enough to fit all the children there, making sure that there's public gardens that are at least of the standard of the public gardens that we have in West Jerusalem, making sure that everybody's connected to the water network, to the electricity network, regardless of permitting or no permitting, because we know that this permitting is completely political. So this is just what I would hope for this city. I really believe this city should be an open city. I wouldn't want to see a border within the city, but there are very creative things that could happen. I think Jerusalem has a huge potential of being a place where we can get to know each other much better, you know. Haifa, for example, which is an Israeli-Palestinian city in the north of Israel, which is mixed. Public schools there are attended both by Israelis and Israeli-Palestinians and Christians and Carmelites. And a joint city, a city that that allows people from diverse backgrounds and ethnicities and religions to have a dialogue respectfully, and when people respect one another, not for being of a certain religious sect, but for being human beings, that is the city that I would aspire for in Jerusalem. And currently we're not going in that direction, but I believe there is hope.
Yes, Simcha, you know, We have less than 5 minutes, and actually, we know that Israelis and Palestinians are negotiating over 18 years, and at the same time, Israeli government is building facts on the ground. We could look at Maale Adumim, that's the area you are already familiar with, that would, if the things continue as it is, in the same pace, we will see that West Bank, excluded Jerusalem, will be split into two different areas, south and north, and I think that situation is built up to for a dead end, that people just negotiate just to kill time. So, Simcha, you are a co-founder and member of an organization of ex-Israeli soldiers who formed Break the Silence to expose human rights violations committed by Israeli army towards the Palestinians. What do you propose to break the silence of the world toward Israeli violation of Palestinian human rights? What's the role of activists in this regard, especially when we know that many Jewish Israeli organizations joined the Palestinian struggle to fight the Israeli occupation? Can you give us a brief in 4 minutes, please?
Yeah. Well, Breaking the Silence is an organization that was formed. It's an Israeli organization, mostly for Israelis. We didn't see ourselves as an Israeli-Palestinian organization or an organization that seeks to be joint. We put this organization together in order to be a mirror to the Israeli society, a place where the Israeli society can look at this, at their children, at the people who are maybe the most respected amongst the Israeli society, which are the soldiers, and tell them, take a look. This is what we did. This is what we did under your name. This is what you guys send us to do. And please decide if you want to continue this or if you want to stop it. But you need to know what is occurring in your name. What is being done in the West Bank? What is being done not by settlers, not by some crazy religious right-wing person, but by the Israeli army, by the consensus, by us, by your children, with a nice smile. And then we also asked Israelis to look at the implications of that, you know. One of our crazy examples is somebody who, like, not crazy example, but something that's happened, like, every single day when I was situated at checkpoints, is, like, just telling people what to do, and And then that same soldier comes back home after he was telling for 3 weeks men who are the age of his father to stop, to come, to go, and also beating him up or things that could be worse than that, threatening the person. Would this person be a good citizen? So trying to bring this the reality of the West Bank, the reality of the occupation, to every single house in Israel. They should know what is happening under their name. And later, many Breaking Silence witnesses went on doing different things. And we as an organization also understood that we can't only be monitoring the occupation. We also need to do something about it. So in South Mount Hebron, for example, we worked together with rabbis for human rights in providing legal aid and helping Palestinian farmers go back to their land after settlers have and the army have been chased them away from their land. So making sure that the human rights violations are stopped and are not continued. And we also find involvement of many, many Breaking the Silence witnesses have become kind of a place where after, unfortunately after, but also before, people can think about what is happening. And one of the inspiring things that I would like to close with is that Breaking the Silence has talked in the past year, 2010, with about 4,000 pre-army high school kids, and many of them might go into the army and, you know, do the same atrocities or the same crazy stuff that we did. But we do hope that many will not. We also hope that many of them will start seeing Palestinians as human beings, as, you know, as people. And with that, I just would like to close. Thank you very much for inviting me to the show. And I hope that Jerusalem should be an open city for to all, and that we respect one another as people, as human beings. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Simcha Leventhal, for sharing your thoughts and experiences with us. And we look forward to keeping in touch with you, particularly concerning your work with Breaking the Silence and the work you do with Palestinians who also work to end the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza. Thank you.
We are happy to be with Simcha, and Israeli give us a good a good side about what's taking place there. And we hope that, and we share the hope with Simcha, that Jerusalem would be open and shared city for all. But at the same time, we hope also that Palestinians will have their own sovereignty over the city, and to have access to the to their houses, to their properties, to their holy sites. And Palestinians, who part of them are Muslims, Christians, and some Palestinians who are even Jewish, who live in Nablus and Shechem, and they also look for access to the city. Even the secular Palestinians who just believe that Jerusalem is a beautiful city that should be accessed for them. And actually, for me, I was born in the city, but I have no right to access and go there. I even spent more first part of my life in the city, but in order to go there, I have to take a permit. Can you believe, John, just to go to your house, you need to take an Israeli permit. I still see our house in the western side of the city where my grandmother used to live, and I have no access to there. And one time I was there, I just saw that cats and dogs live in that house, but for me as Palestinian, I have no access to there, and I'm absentee according to the Israeli law. We are sorry for having this, but for us as Palestinian, I think, John, we have just one thing that we have to struggle, and by the help of the international community, with the international solidarity movement, by our friends in North America and Europe, in the Arab world, and East and Central Asia and Africa, everywhere, South America, we will find the solutions. And I believe that by boycotting, divestment, and sanctions, we will put a pressure over the Israeli government to recognize the Palestinian rights. We all believe in peace, and peace is not just no war. Peace should be connected with justice, and we believe that peace and justice should be for all, starting with Palestinians who are oppressed over the last century. What do you think, John? I'm happy to have this conversation with Simcha. And
yes, this was wonderful, because to get the perspective of an Israeli and an ex-soldier at that, who sees the injustice and has come around to join the struggle for Palestinian rights, and then to get your view, Samer, the way they co-join, I think this is the way the struggle has to go, working with Jews who are committed to the cause of justice along with Palestinians and us in the United States to try to achieve justice for the Palestinian people.
And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved. Get involved. عودة